Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and joining me today is Brian Lagunas. Hey, Brian.
Hey, how you doing?
Brian, been on the show before. Welcome back.
Yeah, it's been last year.
Yep.
New Orleans.
It was. As you can see, we are at TechEd in Houston.
Love it. And you know, I'm from Dallas.
You are?
I'm on home turf now.
Excellent. Fantastic.
Yeah, and I believe last time we talked, we were talking about Idaho, because I live in Idaho, and you're kind of making fun of me because of all the potatoes. Right. Well, I brought something for you.
Well, I may have been making fun of you, but I was not making fun of the state of Idaho.
Well, I brought something for you.
Excellent.
Okay. I think you're going to like it. We have more than just potatoes.
Darth Tater. Spud Wars. That's
Darth
awesome.
Tater.
Excellent.
So welcome to the start side.
Cool.
Spud Wars.
I love it.
Right? That's for you.
That is fantastic. Thank you.
See? We got much more than potatoes.
I love this show.
And plus, last time you gave me beads, so I just thought.
I did, because we were in New Orleans at that point. All right. So we're here today to talk about MVVM.
Yes. Model View View Model.
I did one of the Getting Started series. I did an episode on MVVM. You watched that.
I did watch it. Very
good.
You had
fine things to say about that, although yes. You said that needed some improvement.
Just a little.
You'll tell me about that later. Okay.
Yeah, we'll take that offline.
But what we'll talk about today is get a little bit more into MVVM, get some tips and tricks. You're going to talk to us about things that are literally part of MVVM and things that aren't necessarily part of MVVM. So this will kind of be the next level, if you will, right?
Exactly. MVVM's been around a while now.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of good stuff. There's a lot of bad stuff out there. And unfortunately, Google likes to surface a lot of the bad stuff. So what I hope to accomplish today is just to show some of the really big no-nos and then just some of my advice of how maybe I would approach doing something.
Okay.
So, I got some demos to show if you want to see them.
Sure.
Okay, great.
I always want to see demos.
Everyone loves demos.
Are they up? Well, I'm going to have to turn and watch the screen because I can't see your screen from here.
Okay.
There we are.
Up. So first, let's start by talking about what MVVM truly is.
Yes.
It's not commanding. It's not event aggregation. It's not messaging. It's none of that. You're going to have those problems no matter what pattern you use. If you use code behind, you got to figure that stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, commanding was never unique to view model, right? You had routed commands in WPF and commanding in Silverlight, period.
Right.
That's part of the framework.
It's a feature of XAML.
Exactly. So
MVVM is a pattern.
MVVM is a pattern. It's a design pattern that basically allows you to try to remove some of the logic out from the view code behind to make mm-hmm. it more testable, easy to maintain, and all that stuff. And don't forget, a pattern is just something, a word we use to explain something we use every day.
Right.
It's not a rule. It's not law. It's just so when me and you have a conversation, I kind of know what you're talking about. Oh, MVVM, yeah, okay. But we all have our different implementations.
Which kind of implies that you've structured your application in a particular way, ideally using common terminology like model view and view model.
right.
Although you could do model view, view model, and call it entirely different things, right?
You could.
You call it data, pages, and stuff, and it would still be MVVM.
You're absolutely right.
But the data pages stuff model doesn't really flow off the tongue as well as MVVM.
No, and it's really hard to describe to somebody. Oh, yeah, I do that too, but I call it this. So,
yes.
You know, yeah. So let's go ahead and look at what we got here. I just want to point out I got a couple projects in this solution. The main thing we need to look at is we have this person object, this model, mm-hmm. right? And it's just got some simple properties on it that we're going to be using throughout our demos. Nothing fancy, simple POCO. Everyone should be familiar with this. All right, so MVVM. Now, our view model is going to maintain that state of the view, and we're going to act as the middleman to expose properties of the model up to the view, right, for data binding. So here we have a view model. Every view model is going to look the same that we see today. Every view model is going to have a person model object, right?
Okay.
It's going to be called the model. And then we're going to be creating a new one in its constructor here. That's going to be for every demo we see. Okay? Now, that's the view model. Now, the view is the UI part of this, right?
Right.
That's simple. Everyone knows what a UI is. Now, the part that we need to connect this, the glue that holds this all together, is the view's data context. You can set it in code behind. You can use frameworks. Or you can just do it in XAML like I did here. Yep. I just set the data context to the view model, to a view model instance. And then I get data binding. So if I were to run this app that I'm running now, we'll just see how this behaves. You can see my Visual Studio is building nice and slowly for me. Okay, so we just have a simple form, and as we make changes, things update, right? Okay. Just what we expect. No logic is in the code behind whatsoever. So we want to go view our code behind. There's nothing back here. It keeps our view testable. Yeah, that's what we want. We want our code testable and maintainable. And
now, are you of the opinion that there should never be code in the code behind?
No, I'm not in that opinion whatsoever. I think you need to be pragmatic because, honestly, your customer doesn't care that you have code behind, right, but that you meet the deadline that's midnight tonight to deliver a feature. I would, you know, caution to use view-only code in your code behind, if possible.
So code that enables and disables buttons or, you know, code that makes the app bar sticky or not sticky based on
animations,
whether you're adding those types of things.
Yeah, showing
they're
writing.
Okay. Do you think it's worth the effort to get them out of there? Is it a lot of work?
That's a view responsibility, honestly.
Okay.
It is a view responsibility. Anything to do with the view should really be in the view.
Okay.
If you have to call something.
Because in a purist sense, the purist would say, no code behind at all, and the view model's job is to make the view do things, which, if you look at it from a coding perspective, is a lot harder, and there's a lot of time you've now spent doing that, so you kind of ask yourself, is it worth it?
Right, and while those guys are at work till midnight trying to meet that deadline, I'm home at 5:30 because I added two lines of code behind.
Right, okay.
Right, so, and also, if you are using code behind, you know, at least try to call methods off an interface of your view model and not so much the view model instance itself. So if I was in my code behind, I wouldn't want to say, you know, data context as whatever view model dot do something. I would like to have an interface that would at least abstract that concrete implementation so it doesn't hurt you nearly as bad because you're just coding to an interface.
Got it. Okay.
Right? So we understand MVVM. This is MVVM at its simplest.
Yep.
This is it. Nothing else is involved. Okay. Now, you'll notice on this view model, I implement what's called iNotify property changed.
Yep.
This, you would think everyone knows to do this. Everyone should know to do this on your view models. Because this is the mechanism that lets the UI know, hey, I've changed, refresh your view, you know, refresh yourself so you can get the new value of whatever I'm giving you.
Yep.
That's exactly what it does. Now, let's get to one of my biggest pet peeves I think I have with MVVM. And it's the base class that people choose to use for their view models. How many times have you seen a view model do this? View model derived from dependency object. Have you seen
I usually derive from view model base, and my basic view model base just implements iNotify property change.
Exactly. You're doing it right.
Woohoo!
This is plaguing the internet right now. Never, ever derive from dependency object. And I have six main reasons.
Why do people do it?
Because they were taught poorly in the very beginning. When MVVM was just coming out, you know, this is what people thought you needed to do. But I have six technical reasons, not a personal, but technical, why you should not do this. And I listed them up top because there's so many of them. One, you are now adding dependencies on view-related objects. A dependency object was never meant to be a source of a binding, but rather a target, meaning it's existing in the UI layer. Okay. Two, this is a pretty important one. You can't override the equals or get hashed hash code methods. Those are sealed. That means if you need to do any type of equality comparison with your view models, it's not going to happen. You can't do it. Three, here's a big one. Thread affinity. Do you know what thread affinity is?
Let's pretend I don't.
Okay.
Because not all our viewers do.
So what a thread affinity says is an object created on one thread cannot be used by another.
Okay.
A dependency object has thread affinity. It can only be used on the thread that created it. And I'm going to show you how that works. So actually, let's just hop into that, and we'll come back to the other problems. So this is the same example. I'll take you to a quick look at the code behind, because I added some multi-threading code just to demonstrate this. Obviously, you would not necessarily put this in your button click, but like I said, I'm trying to demonstrate the multi-threaded part of this. So here's my view model that implements or derives from dependency object. Now I'm going to multi-thread creating some view models. Let's see what happens. And then I'm going to list them in this list box. Let's go ahead and hit that button. Exception.
Oh.
You can't do it because the owning thread is not the UI thread. You just crash your application. That's a big one. Okay, another thing. serialization. It's not marked as serializable. So if you need to serialize anything under your view model, not going to happen.
Okay.
Another thing, it's difficult to read. Look at the syntactical pleasure there is of dependency properties. That's a lot. Just yes. to create a property and then listen for changes on that property. Did my value change, yes or no? That's a lot of syntactical sugar you got going on there, right? So we don't want to do this. And one final note is that you still need to implement iNotify property change for any CLR properties
right.
you have in your view model. Because if they're not, every single one of them aren't dependency properties, you're still going to have to raise on property changed. Okay, so this is not what we want to do at all. We just want to comment that out. And we're just going to replace it with a normal view model that we saw in our first example yep. that implements iNotify property changed. Our code is already simpler, cleaner, easier to read. Now, I'm just going to change
that. That property changed on property change and stick it in view model base, and then you don't have to duplicate that code over and over again.
Don't have to do that. So now look at what happens when I multi-thread the same thing. I didn't change anything but my derived class. Now it works.
Excellent.
Your application doesn't crash because these do not have thread affinity. I can spin these off anywhere. So what do you think about that? I mean, you've never seen that. Can you believe that people do that?
I believe most things.
So don't do that.
I've been in this business long enough to believe that people do it.
Yeah, I normally don't speak in absolutes, but that's one okay. do not do. Okay, now here's another one. Have you ever seen a view model that may be called person view model? And then what happens is there's an internal private property or private variable that is an instance of your actual model object. So in this case, we have a defined person object, and we're storing that in internal person.
Yes.
And then what we do is we wrap every single property on that model person again, right? And all we do is get and set the internal instance, first name, last name, for every getter and setter. This is really popular. The problem is,
I may be guilty of this or at least something closely resembling that.
Yeah. So the problem is, this is not MVVM. This is facade. This is a different pattern. We have lots of great patterns we use when we develop. And sometimes some patterns just become dominant mm-hmm. and we forget about what else we do. But remember, a pattern is just something we give a name. So when we're talking about, we know what it is. This is facade, right? So facade says that if I need to either hide properties, limit my API, because there's valid scenarios for this. There most definitely is. Let's say I just wanted to expose three properties off this object for security reasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you wouldn't want to do that. Basically, you would create a new class. In this case, I call it Person Facade. And this is where you would do your wrapping, okay? And then once you get that, then you go to your view model. And you would use your person facade here. If I can type.
Okay. Got it.
Now your view model uses your person facade. And actually, I don't have an overload on that because I'm wrapping an object. And then you would run the application. And then it would behave just like you would expect. You get all your data binding, your data is there,
mm-hmm.
your view model is simple, all that great stuff.
It also makes more sense in terms of abstracting because you may have multiple views on the data that need to become facades. One is, you know, the bare minimum of data. One is, you know, what administrators get to see. One is, you know, et cetera. If you had three or four different ways you're going to display the data, you wouldn't necessarily want three or four different versions of that inside the view model.
Exactly.
You would want to figure out which facade to use and then probably maybe even do some dependency injection at the time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We can get into dependency injection later if you want. but, yeah, so, you know, we have to recognize areas of our code where we're actually using other patterns that aren't MVVM. Mm-hmm. You know, decorator patterns, another common one that kind of start creeping in a view model when it should really be decorator.
So is, I have before I had a view model called customer and a property called Selected Customer, which represented the customer. Is that facading?
No, that is okay. Exposing state that your view needs.
Okay.
Right? So your view model would have a property called customers, which would
right.
be a list.
Yep.
And then you would have that selected customer property.
Okay, good.
And then you would data bind to that. That
right.
That is exposing the state your view needs.
Okay, good. All right.
Right? So that's another common one. So here's another thing, commanding. So commanding really doesn't have anything to do with MVVM. But when I see people implement commands, I see them always hooking up to the command manager, for example.
But have WPF. You seen ever seen anybody show MVVM without commanding?
I did. So now you
okay,
have.
So other than you, like if you go to any websites or get any book that talks about it, or go to any talks that talk about it, they always command. So you can
right.
understand why people might think that even though it's a feature, it's something that you do as part of MVVM. It's
right,
definitely a practice of MVVM practitioners, if you will.
Right, because you need a way to respond to user interactions on your view. And commands are a great way to do that.
And it's also a great way to get the code out of the code behind, right?
Exactly. So all that code you were talking about earlier about enabling and disabling buttons, well, your commands do that for you.
So if a command, you got a save button or an add button, right? It's going to call code that lives in the view model, right? So you don't, from the click event handler of the add or save button, want to call into the view model,
right?
Right. So one of the reasons you did a command was so that you could point to a method in the view model.
I guess.
What's the difference between pointing to a method in the XAML versus pointing to the method in the code behind?
Because you're not really pointing to a method. You're pointing to an iCommand implementation, which is different.
True, true. I mean, in practice, right, you're calling an iCommand, which is tied to a method typically, right? You've got a save button. It's going to call the save method.
Yes.
So you abstract it. You have no code in the code behind, and you've just got simply a command in the XAML. And the view model knows what that means. The view doesn't know what it means. You click save, and the view knows that it should turn around and say to the view model, I save me, whatever that means. Go do
right.
something.
Go do something.
It's up to you. Go do something. Let me know what happens. Let me know if I'm supposed to do something.
Right.
Right? So is that not part of MVVM, given that MVVM is heavily about abstracting, and one of the benefits / goals is to get the code out of the code behind?
That is just a problem that you have to solve, and commands is the way to do it. Remember,
okay.
MVVM is a pattern. It's not implementation, really.
Okay.
It's how you separate the logic, your view, your model. It's not so much the inner workings. Now, commands are important in MVVM because you need a way to communicate back and forth between the view and the view model. Technically, if you don't want to use commands, you don't have to. You can use event to method. You can actually invoke a method on your view model directly.
Okay.
Don't even need an iCommand.
Okay.
I wouldn't personally recommend that, but you can do it, right?
Do you think commanding is the most straightforward, easiest way to do it?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
But there are instances where you need something a little more powerful.
Right. Okay.
So let's go ahead and look at a view model. Once again, we have our person. We have our view model constructor where we're creating a person. And then we have a command. I command some command, right?
Yep.
So what this is
Boy,
a
that's
WPF
some
app.
Command.
Yeah, that's some command, let me tell you. But this is a WPF implementation, and this is mainly applies to the WPF because let's go check out this custom command we created here. Too many customers in my head. So a custom command is normally implemented by implementing the iCommand interface, and then you basically add the can execute and execute and can execute changed contracts off that interface.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you see a lot is this right here, where people are hooking into the command manager.requery suggested. Okay. Now, don't do that. I'm going to show you why. Let's run the application. I'm going to set this as our default startup project. I want to run this app. You see, I have a breakpoint on can execute.
Yep.
Now, what happens is when you hook into the command manager's requery suggested, is you now have no control over when that can execute is invoked. My view, you see what's going on here, don't you? my view keeps trying to pop up.
Yeah.
But as it does, the can execute is invoked. So if I have a debug write line.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see every time I hit that, F5. So I'm going to undo the breakpoint so we can see this come up. Okay, here's our app. Let's bring up our output again. I'm just going to dock that here.
And
now watch. Let me clear. Oh, there it is again. There it is again. Huh. Again. There's it.
Huh.
You get what I'm saying. You do not control that. So if you have any type of logic that hits web services or a database or runs any type of logic to check if you can execute this command, you are going to add some serious performance overhead to your app.
Absolutely.
So you don't want to do that. So instead, there's a common command implementation out there called delegate command. You might have heard it referred to as relay command.
Yep.
Something like that. Oh, and before I forget, I also want to comment that when you create your own custom command, normally commands need some type of data from your view model to execute on.
Okay.
So you're always adding a dependency on that command to some type of object, right? So we don't want that dependency. So here, now we get back to what I was talking about, a relay command, also known as a delegate command. Now, let's comment out this view model because it uses that other command we don't want to use. And let's use this slightly more complicated, longer view model. So, oops. If I can learn how to uncomment code properly. There we go. Okay. So the Microsoft Patterns and Practices team, as you know, the Prism 5.0 just released.
Yep.
Well, part of Prism 5.0, they did
5.0 for WPF.
For WPF only.
Yep. Yes.
But a lot of what Prism came out with has been separated into separate assemblies and NuGet packages that you can use with no dependency on Prism whatsoever. And one of those is the new Prism.mvvm NuGet package. And basically what it ships with is a delegate command,
mm-hmm.
composite command, things like that. And a delegate command is exactly what I was talking about. I believe MVVM Lite calls it relay command, if I'm
right.
not mistaken. But basically what a delegate command does is it allows you to provide a delegate method in place of the execute and can execute contracts of the iCommand interface. So we still have the same view model with the model person. I'll explain this in a minute. Okay. So now I'm creating a new instance of a delegate command. In this particular example, I'm not using parameters, but if I wanted to, this could be of type object or type, you know, person or whatever my parameter would be. But our example, we don't care about parameters. So now for my execute, I say, hey, whenever you're invoked, I want you to go ahead and execute and invoke the execute command that I defined as my delegate,
mm-hmm.
okay? And then whenever you're checking, if you can execute, I want you to invoke the can execute method in my view model. So we're removing the need for that extra class.
Yep.
We're keeping all the logic within the view model itself. And now we have access to any object within that view model that we may need to check, validate, or invoke some type of action on. Okay, now I'm going to comment this out really quick because I want to show you something. Oh, wrong one. No, that's the right one. Got so many examples, you lose track. Okay, so here's the view. I have a button on here that's bound to this command. So I'm going to change something here. Let's go click this. Okay, command executed. But you're going to notice that this property, this can execute, it doesn't change. No matter what I type, I'm not rechecking anything.
Right.
You know, down in my Outlook, on my output panel, you don't see the command check executed being checked over and over and over, right? I'm clicking around. It only invokes when I click the command.
Which is the only time you should check if it can execute, when you need
well,
it, right?
Well, depends on your business rules. Okay, so let's stop this. In the last example we saw, we hooked into the command manager.
Yeah.
And that's just going to fire can execute whenever it feels like it. Well, now, since we removed that, delegate command does not do that. Relay command, I believe, does not do that, if I'm mistaken. I don't use relay command, but I don't believe it does that. So instead, what you have to do is you have to manually tell the app, hey, I want you to check the state now. You know, recheck my can execute. So one way to do that in this example is I'm hooking into the models a property changed event because our business object, our model, implements iNotify property changed. I'm hooking into that. And then every time a property changes on that model, on that instance, I'm going to raise the can execute changed of that command. So if I hit a breakpoint, we'll run this again. Let the build start. We're going to check it once. Okay, now when I change a value, my can execute's going to come fire again.
Okay.
And that's because we are hitting that property, this property changed event handler we hooked into. So we remove that excessive command checking.
Yes.
But now you're responsible for it. Okay, but personally, I like it that way.
It should be that way.
And like this is just a simple example. Your business requirement may not say, hey, on every time a property changes on my model, update it. It may be something else.
Right.
Right? But you know, the lesson is you're responsible now. Okay, so I have another one. View model locator. Have you heard of view model locator?
Yep.
What do you think about it?
I think that on the face of it, it seems like an awful lot of work without necessarily knowing what you're getting from it. The whole locator thing, it seems like the kind of thing to me that you would absolutely use a framework for. You'd go get somebody else to write it for you.
Yep.
It does, I've seen them where it does make it a little bit easier because you don't necessarily have to specify what view model you're working with. But on the other hand, how much code does it take to specify the view model you're working with?
Right.
So it, on the face of it, it seems like it gets into the realm of maybe diminishing returns. Like when I did the getting started, you know, initially the intention was, and my initial thought was, the end result of this series should be that we talk about what frameworks to use. And I think that if you're going to use a framework, you should understand what it does. And the best way to understand what that framework does is write the code yourself.
Right.
And so I was going to write service locators and view model locators, but it was hard. And I said, you know what? I don't want to write that kind of code. If I'm going to do this kind of thing, I'm going to use a framework. And so I got in this catch 22, and I just left it out of the what was already an hour-long initial review of MVVM. So
and that's where
I'd put it in the category of things that takes a lot of code to do yourself. You shouldn't write it yourself. You should have somebody else do it for you. But what are you really gaining from it?
Right. So that's where these toolkits and these frameworks come
in. And I don't want to imply that you don't gain anything from it.
Right.
But when you start down the path of writing the code, you may not be 100% clear what it gains you.
Right. And keep in mind that view model
locator. Is that a fair comment?
That's a fair statement.
Because I'm not trying to imply that anybody who's ever done one and all the frameworks that have them are dumb. And you should absolutely think about using them if the framework you have supplies it, because they're not hard to use.
No.
They're very easy to use once somebody else who's way smarter than you has written the code for it.
Right. And so technically, view model locator, once again, has nothing to do with MVVM. But I want to talk about it because there's a lot of different ways to do it. And I just want to show you one way that I personally like. Now, view model locator, that's a tongue twister, right? Say that five times real fast.
So before we go into this, because this is now bothering me that I may have just insulted or denigrated the feature. Let's review the benefits of using them.
Okay. So what it does is it is a mechanism to basically set the data context of your view to a view model.
Right.
That's it. And at the heart of it, that's all it really does. And it does it automatically.
Automatically. So you get automatic binding of your view to the view model. You don't have to write the code yourself.
Exactly.
The other beautiful thing about it, potentially, is that it helps you not forget to set the context.
Right.
Right? Which, if you do, if you forget to set the context, your app runs, the view shows up, and no data shows up. This is my, by the way, number one pet peeve of XAML. When I data bind controls, and I haven't told them where to get the data from, I want crashes. I want exceptions to be thrown. I want my application to blow up and tell me exactly why the data is not appearing.
Well, you need to watch your output window. Have that up.
No, I don't want to watch my output window. I want an exception. If I try and call a service that I don't have access to because it's secure, I don't check the output window. The application blows up. I want my application to blow up when I've done something like that.
Right. Okay, so we've seen how, in my simple examples, I set the data context in the XAML. You can do it in CodeBehind, like we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple different ways to do it. So I just want to talk a little bit about the view model locator and how I've seen some implementations of it. There's quite a few, and I found one that I actually like. Okay, so one thing I don't like about a lot of the implementations I see is that, for example, let's look at a very common approach to creating a view model locator. You create a class, you call it view model locator,
mm-hmm.
and then you create a property that will hold basically a static instance of your view model. Right, and I already have a typo in mine, but that's okay. And then what you do is you'll probably go into your app.xaml, and you'll define that view model locator as a resource. Just lets you use it throughout your app with no issues. And then you'll go to your main window, and then you'll set the data context to the main window view model, and you'll give it the source of our static resource, view model locator.
Right.
That's a lot of steps.
Well, but now you're done. You don't have to, in the code behind, fire up an instance of the main window view model.
Nope.
So there's less code to write.
There's less C# code to write.
Yeah.
Now let's look at what happens when you want to
and
add.
And I've also seen them where it knows that this is the main window.xaml, so it knows which view model to get, and you don't even have to specify go get main window.
That's
view
where
model.
The toolkits come in handy. This is where the frameworks help you out. Is they help auto-wire convention-based a lot of that for
you. Seems pretty handy.
Yeah, so this is a very basic implementation of view model locator if someone's not using a framework, right?
Right.
But what happens when you want to add a new view and a new view model? Okay, I got to open up my view model locator, and let's add another property. If you're doing it with templates, if you're doing implicit templates for your view models instead, mm-hmm. got to add a new template, you know, new data template. Let's throw it in there. You know, so extensibility, it's a pain. Maintenance, it's a pain. So instead, I'm going to leave my app.xaml open here because I'm going to change this to Prism main window. So earlier in the last demo, I mentioned that Prism released a new Prism.mvvm assembly on NuGet.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those things that come with it is a view model locator. So we no longer need to play with this. So I'm just going to go open up my Prism main window. And we're just going to take a look here. Now, there's one thing that's required to use the Prism View Model Locator. I'm going to show it to you first. Your view must implement iView. So in this case, Prism Main Window has to implement iView. And what iView is, if we just take a quick peek, it's just a single property of type object called data context.
Okay.
What has that? Just about every UI element, right?
Yeah.
A window would definitely have that. Now, I don't know about the apps you write, but every app I write has that exact same interface with the exact same property. But I normally use constructor injection for my view models.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I'm going to do that anymore because of Prism's implementation.
Cool.
So just to show you right quick, the implementation I'm using, let's go installed, is the prism.mvvm.
Okay.
And you go get this on NuGet. No, close. Go back to my view here. And all we have to do is add a namespace where the view model locator is at. And then we simply set the auto wire view model equal to true.
Right.
Okay.
Cool.
And then based on convention, now this is where it gets interesting because I don't like their convention. This goes into another topic. A little off topic, but it all ties together. The convention for Prism's MVVM view model locator is I got to have my views in a views folder and my view models in a view models folder. I hate that. I can't stand it. Every time I see it, I cringe. And the reason is once you start building very large enterprise applications, The second that your solution does not fit in scrollable space of your Solution Explorer, your app became horribly complicated to navigate.
And what if you want to call your view model folder something like view mode, right?
Well, you can do that. I'm going to show you how to get around that, because as you can see, this demo does not have any views or view model
folders. No, it doesn't. Okay.
I like to keep my view model right next to my view, because if I'm working on that view model, I'm working on that view, and I don't want to go hunt for it.
Fair enough.
And if you have, you know, I work with Prism a lot, the composition part, the modular part, so I have apps with 200 modules.
And how does it work if you've got your view model spread across different libraries, like you're using PCLs or the new shared
project that's where
universal apps?
We're going to go take a quick look at the app.xaml code behind, because I've overrid the on startup.
Okay.
And basically, Prism allows you to override how that convention is.
Oh, good.
So this method calls every time your view requests a view model. So you take the view name, you do some replace, find replace, whatever your convention is.
Mm-hmm.
And then in my case, my view model exists in the same location as my view.
Yeah.
You can change any of the naming conventions. And then
as long as it's in the assembly, it shouldn't matter what folder it's in, right?
Well, no. In this case,
it's a class name?
In this case, well, exactly. It's based off namespace, technically.
Namespace, right.
You know, I want to say it has to be in a folder, because when people use folders, they're always right-clicking, add new class.
Yes.
And that's what they're used to. That's what their brains map to. But you're right. Technically, it's the namespace it goes off of. So if your namespace is, you know, view models or views, it can be located anywhere.
So that's brings up an interesting tangent. If you put your view models in a folder called view model and your models in a folder called model, when you right-click and add, you automatically get name of app dot models is the namespace. Name of app dot view models is the namespace, which means that if you go and use those anywhere else, you always have to add a using project.viewmodels, using project.models. So do you do that, or do you just have everything in the same namespace? Where do you
have
the pain after you add something? You got to change the namespace.
Yeah, that's another reason I like to keep my view models and views together.
Okay.
Because they're in the same namespace.
Right.
And they're right next to each other. When I have, you know, 200 modules in this massive enterprise application, I'm not searching around for it. It's right there. And actually, a friend of mine, Carl Shiflett, he wrote a Visual Studio plugin that actually allows you to right-click in Visual Studio and nest it right with the .cs file. So it nests it right in Visual Studio, so it collapses your Solution Explorer even more.
Ah, okay.
And what I also like about Prism's implementation is I can use my container. There's another method on here. I'm just going to pull it up. I'm not going to show it or anything. Set default view model factory. So I use Unity. I've used structure map, really good containers. So you were talking about dependency injection. You can now use your own container to resolve these instances of your view models. And so that means all your dependencies of those view models that they may need are already resolved for you as well.
Cool.
So even more code has been reduced.
Awesome.
That's what I got for you.
We're done?
We're done. That's my time slot. You said, Brian, I got like 15 minutes. I think I went over.
I think I said we had up to an hour and a half.
Oh, is that what you said?
I think that's what
I didn't hear that.
I think that's what I said, but I was hoping that we weren't going to be here for an hour and a half. Well, this is great. This is excellent tips and tricks. So let's talk a little, bring it up a level. Let's talk a little bit more about advice you would have for someone who's new in MVVM. What, you never use a framework?
I never use a framework.
Okay.
I've never needed one.
Because you've essentially written your own, or you just have never felt the need?
I've never felt the need. For one, how hard is it to set a data context?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's really where that connection's made. And all the other problems like eventing, like we didn't talk about event aggregation. That's basically how do you communicate, you know, loosely coupled components like view models that don't know about each other, but maybe you're navigating to one or navigating away, or you need to send a message somewhere else in the system, right? So I like to use the term event aggregation, or some people refer to it as messaging.
Right.
Right. You know, I use the PubSub events for that, the prism.pubsub events, the NuGet package. These problems have already been solved. Don't get me wrong, those toolkits, MVVM Lite, Caliburn, extremely valuable to a lot of people. Yeah.
Yep.
Extremely valuable. Just me personally, I don't need them.
Okay.
I already have components that I use that work, and I'm efficient with them.
So I assume the answer to the following question is no, but the question would be, does the way you implement MVVM, does the way you approach MVVM, does the way you implement MVVM differ based on what type of app you're building? WPF or Silverlight or Windows Phone?
No,
Silverlight or Windows Phone, Windows Runtime, Windows 8 Windows Runtime, using the Xamarin stuff. There's, you know, XAML all over the place. Does the way you do MVVM, implement MVVM, change based on where you're at?
No, XAML is XAML. Data binding is data binding. MVVM as a pattern does not change on any XAML platform. It is the same. As far as implementation details per application, it really depends on the style of the developer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people like to do MVVM just a certain way. They like to arrange things. Some people love the view models folder and the views folder, and that's great for them. You know, they can do that. So a lot of that becomes personal in how they actually implement, but the pattern itself does not change.
Okay. And so the way you approach it, the way you think about it, would be exactly the same.
Yep.
What might change is obviously some of the XAML you write, some of the code you write, the plumbing details would change based on the APIs and the runtime you're targeting.
Right, and the toolkit you're using.
Yeah.
You know, for example, Prism's view model locator. So if we take a quick look at the references added, we have prism.mvvm, and then we have this prism.desktop. Now, prism.mvvm, this is a PCL, and this is the exact same PCL that's used on the Windows Store side of things for the Prism guidance for Windows Store apps. Okay, so they would not be using, if you're building Windows Store, you're not using the mvvm.desktop.
Right.
Right. This is specific to WPF. So there's a tooling difference there, which will slightly change implementation on the Windows Store side of things.
Okay.
But as far as patterns go, it's the same.
Okay. So you like Prism. Is those guys are doing a talk at Tech Ed.
Yep,
Francis
they are.
Chung's here, I believe. Is Blaine with him, or is it just Francis?
It's Blaine and Francis.
Okay, Blaine and Francis. And then I actually spoke to Francis yesterday. We're going to have him back on Toolbox to show us WPF, and then...
Oh, I got to get a seat for that one. I'll sit right over there.
Well, it won't be down here. It'll be back in Redmond.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I definitely want to get those guys on again.
Yeah, I like a lot of the stuff that they do that comes out of that shop. Mm-hmm. They're doing a lot of good things on just guidance and patterns in general.
Yeah, and I'd love to have... some of the other frameworks on as well. So,
you
guys are in Redmond, going to be in Redmond, just let me know.
You should have Warren on. He just published a brand new course on Pluralsight for his MVVM Lite toolkit.
Yep.
You'd have a lot of conversation with him on that.
Absolutely. Yep.
So.
All right. Cool. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. It's
great
always
stuff.
A pleasure.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
And we'll see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.